welcome to episode 183 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. We're glad you're joining us this week, and our goal is to inform, educate, and inspire. And we hope that tuning in for our weekly chats will help you push you outside of your comfort zone and add some new experiences to your bucket list. We also welcome ideas for topics, so if there's something you'd like to hear more about, let us know. My name is Donna, and this week I am joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Lindsay, Sandy, Elizabeth, and Laura. And today I am honored to welcome my friend Nick Hughes to the broadcast. I met Nick several years ago, and he has a fascinating history. He is a former member of the French Foreign Legion who parlayed his military experience into being a bodyguard for the rich and famous. His career took him around the world, and his clients have included members of the Saudi royal family, the artist Peter Max, various rock and roll stars and dignitaries, and he's also appeared on Spike's TV's Deadliest Warrior and teaches self-defense. Recently, he published the critically acclaimed How to Be Your Own Bodyguard, a collection of tips and tricks he used to keep his clients safe in hostile places. It's been nominated for the Book of the Year in its genre in the UK and made it to number 2 on the Amazon list. So welcome, Nick.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us. Great. Hey. Thanks.
Cool.
So you're a lot safer now that you're here.
I know. Yeah.
So, and we have tons of questions, and of course, probably half of them won't relate to travel. So we're trying to keep up to our travel.
You know?
we'll keep them to travel. So I'd be curious if you have some things that you see. I mean, obviously, your job is to keep other people safe, so you're always watching around. But do you see common mistakes in tourists that you think if they just knew these one, two, or three things, then life would be so much better for them while they travel?
Not just one, two, or three things. 1, 2, or 350 things.
All right, but we only have a 4-minute podcast.
Yeah. Now, I broke the book down into sections. So there are specific things you should be doing in an airport. There are specific things you should be doing in a hotel. There are things you should do to your home when you're leaving it to go on vacation. There are things you should do when you're on foot.
So let's talk about the airport. That might be the easiest way to start. And one of the things where, I mean, obviously security is on top of mind for everybody at an airport. So do you have maybe one or two things that you can give us from the book that would make us want to read more, but also might solve a lot of problems really quickly if people would just change what they're doing?
Well, here's a couple. One, make sure your luggage label is inside your luggage. The airlines require you, by their laws, to have your name and address in your luggage. A lot of people.
I've heard that before. So you're saying to actually put the tag inside, you know, because now you have like covered luggage tags and all those things. But you're saying just pack it all the way inside.
Covered luggage tag on the high-end luggage, or you simply put it inside the luggage. The law just says it has to be in the luggage somewhere. It does not have to be on the outside. And the most elegant solution is a little one that has the cover over the top, because then the airline doesn't have to go through your bag to find where you put the thing. So you have it on the outside, but just have a cover on it. Don't have it glaringly obvious. Another one is get through security as fast as you can. There have been attacks in airports around this country and around the world, and they get you on the outside. So they had that one in England, I believe it was Glasgow. They had the guy tried to stab everybody in LAX a couple of years ago. So you want to get to the airport and get through security as fast as you possibly can and get on the other side, because that's going to reduce your risk of some mad gunman turning up or someone setting off a bomb out in the public area.
You're saying that it is safer inside security. And one thing that travelers say a lot is that they don't believe that TSA is really helping in any way. What they do is so cursory. So are you saying that's really not completely true, that maybe they are providing a service?
No, it's absolutely true. But there is less likelihood of a gunman or someone setting off the bomb. I mean, there's nothing stopping him outside this side of security, on the public side.
Mm-hmm.
So you're all there at check-in. He can roll up, walk in, and just start opening fire. And they have done that. He's going to have a hard time getting something like a gun or his bomb through that security inside. So once you're on the other side of that, all right, now there's another layer to this. I always told my clients, join the airline clubs. If you're doing a lot of travel, now they used to be $100 a year. I think now they're closer to $5. With VIP clients, we would go into those because they are typically hidden. It's not advertised, so you know where they are. You're given a map. And once you're in there, that is another layer of protection. We always, in security, we always talk about layers of protection. So if you look at the Secret Service looking after the president, they have this outer ring and then they have a tighter inner ring and it just keeps coming over. And so you go through TSA as fast as you can and then get into the airline lounge, if that's feasible, if that's within you. You want to time it so you're not getting to the airport too early. So another couple of quick tips. I'll give you three. One is laptops. That is the number one most stolen object in airports. And the old scam used to be that you would put your laptop in to go through the x-ray machine, and right as you do that, a guy jumps in front of you and with a story or a ploy that he has to get to his flight, he's running late. As he goes into the metal detector in front, he has zippers and watches and belt buckles and money in his pockets, so he doesn't clear the machine and he has to keep coming back out and emptying something else. They're now stalling, and his buddy is on the inside and has collected your laptop and is gone. Another one when you're inside, and this is a classic, people go into the bathroom, they hang their coat or their bag on the hook behind the door, and then the person reaches their hand over the top and snags the bag or your jacket and takes off. You're, of course, preoccupied and can't do anything about that one, and they walk out of the airport and they're gone. They have busted people doing what's called surfing, and a very astute security guard at an airport saw the same family 3 days in a row, so he became suspicious. What this guy was doing with his wife and kids is he would have his video camera filming them, but what he had was a zoom lens, and as people were standing, and this used to be when you had the phones with the credit cards, and you'd be punching the number in, he would be recording your credit card details, and he was doing that to people all through the airport for 8 hours a day. And this guard on the third day noticed the same family, thought it was weird. They started watching what he was doing and found out that's what it was. And it's called surfing, where they look over your shoulder. It's the same thing they do with that luggage tag that we talked about.
Yeah.
I also tell clients, don't sit near glass. Always be behind a pillar. So a lot of people like to sit right in front of the window and look at the planes coming and going. If there is a bomb blast, that is the worst place to be sitting, anywhere near glass. Glass goes flying in the explosion, and it goes one way first. There's a massive vacuum created, and then all that debris that's in the air gets sucked back out the other way, so you get hit with it twice. If you want to avoid sitting near big observation windows, be very careful about putting your – I never put my jacket or my bag on that hook on the back of the door. Try and get the end stall in the bathroom if you can, because that eliminates the risk of someone reaching under the stall from at least one side, and put your bag on the side that's close to the air.
I've always sort of wondered if somebody tried to steal my bag, how they'd get away with it, because it's always so heavy. I actually kind of laugh about it. I'm like, I kind of want to see somebody struggle to pull this thing over the door.
I was just thinking the same thing. I always travel with this Oakley backpack, and I swear it weighs more than my checked bag.
The jacket is the big one, because most people have their passport and their money and their ticket mm-hmm. sitting in the inside pocket of that, and they'll take their coat off and hang it, and that's gone.
All these thieves expecting people to be organized. I don't have anything where it's supposed to be.
So that might work in your favor. Can we talk a little bit more about passport security since you brought that up? Because I think that's the biggest question we get is, where should I keep my passport while I'm traveling? I know I need it. It's super important. But if it's on me, somebody could steal it off of me. But if it's in the hotel, then they could steal it from the hotel. So what are your rules there?
A couple of tricks with that. One is, buy one of these passport wallets, and they're like a money belt for a passport, and they go around your neck and they hang underneath your clothing. All right, so again, security is nothing more than pieces of Swiss cheese. If you have one piece, right, there are holes in it. Now you take a second piece of Swiss cheese and lay it over the first one, and now there's less holes, and then you take another piece and lay it over the top. Now you've plugged all the holes up. So everything is layers. So I would take the passport wallet and have that underneath my clothing. You're also going to want to make photocopies of your passport. And this is how you get around a lot of places in Europe. Some hotels want to keep the passport overnight. Some just want to take it long enough to record the details, which in certain countries they have to do by law. So you can give them the copy. You show them that it matches the original and say, I'm keeping the original on me because I have to go down to the embassy, and leave them the photocopy.
Very good idea.
Oh, yeah. I also recommend nowadays taking all of this documentation that you have on travel. So if you're going with kids and you've got medical records, if you're a businessman and you've got medical prescriptions, passports, travel documents, visas, scan all of it and put it on a thumb drive and take the thumb drive with you. Because now if your passport is stolen, it's very easy to go and stick the thumb drive in those internet cafes. Mm-hmm. Print your stuff out and go to the embassy, and now you have at least copies of everything that you had to stole. Because when you're down there trying to identify yourself and your license is gone and your passport's gone, it takes forever. But if you have the copies on that, and again, thumb drives are so cheap, so tiny, you could do three or four of those things and keep stashed all over the place. Password protected, of course, and then if any of you've got... In the very few hotels in the very small places, some of the towns in Italy, local law enforcement requires them to take that documentation and hold it so the cop comes around in the middle of the night and scans through the passports to make sure that there's nobody on it. That's why they do it.
Oh,
it's becoming less prevalent, especially since the onset of the EU. That you might run into it, but it's really no big deal to let the guy have it. What's happening in the smaller pensions and the smaller hotels is that clerk, when you've gone to bed, that's when he's going to sit down and copy all the passport information out. That's why you get your passport.
Interesting.
But most of them are happy to accept the photocopy.
That's good to know, because I think that's the thing, is you never know. You feel like you can't give them a photocopy. And I wasn't even sure, I mean, how valuable the photocopy would be when you're trying to identify yourself. You know, if everything's stolen and you have a photocopy, is that good enough?
Better than nothing. Mm-hmm. If you're standing in the embassy and you've got nothing at all saying it was stolen, it's going to take a hell of a long time to verify who you are and check. And embassies, you know, that's not their job. A lot of people get angry when they turn up and they think the embassy staff is there to drop everything and take care of them. That's not their job.
Mm.
At least if you have a photocopy and a picture of your driver's license, voter registrations card, social security card, all of that stuff is going to expedite you getting your passport back, or an emergency travel document. Again, depends on which country you're with. The Americans will issue with a British will issue with an American emergency travel document.
How do you feel about the safes that are in most hotels?
Yeah, they're not safe.
That's what I thought.
Don't use them. Here's the deal with those. They come with two codes. They have a setup button. Usually, I mean, they're all different, but most of them, you punch in a certain thing of numbers, and then you can enter in your own passcode, right? So, and then you're supposed to remember that. And that's where you keep your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They all come with two sets of numbers. Typically, it's 50s or 51s, and that's for hotel security. So if someone has forgotten the number that they use to get into the safe, hotel security comes up, and they have a backdoor method to get in to get your stuff out.
Hotel security number is 50s?
Yeah, it's usually 50s or 51s.
Oh, my God. Totally trying that next time.
Trust me, we're all going to be at the next hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is one of the problems that I wrestled with writing the book, because you're giving information to criminals at the same time you're giving it to people to tell them what to look out for. So I have one scam, and I run a course called How to Be Your Own Bodyguard, where you come to the hotel for the weekend and we teach you all this stuff and we do hands-on. And I always scam one of the people showing up. So what I did was, I wait for the guy who comes in who's all harried and tired, and he goes up to his hotel room. You give them about 10 minutes, and then you call the room from your phone outside in the parking lot. So I listen to his room number being given to him. So then, Mr. Smith, you're in room 315. I go outside, call the hotel, say, I need to speak to Mr. Smith in 315. He answers the phone, and I say, it's Jorge downstairs in management. We did not get your credit card properly. Save yourself the trip down. Can you just give us the numbers again, please? He pulls out his card, reads the numbers out, and I've got his credit card information. So the next morning at the seminar, I've got them all up there, and I'm, by the way, whose credit card number is, and I read the numbers out. And this guy jumps up like, how the hell did you get that? And I was the manager last night that called you for the credit card. Now, I put that in the book, and of course there are criminals now will see that and use it, but how do you tell the public of a scam like that if you don't make that information available? So I wrestle sometimes with some of the stuff I have to tell people and some that I won't.
Mm-hmm. So where would you put your passport in a hotel room then, if you don't want to carry it with you, or your laptop?
I keep it in that passport wallet, or they make places like Gander Mountain, Walmart, gun stores. They have these very small, compact steel safes, and what they're designed for is to keep your pistol in places where you travel with a concealed carry permit, and let's say you're going to go into the bank. Well, you can have a concealed carry permit, but the bank doesn't let you take the pistol inside. If you leave that gun under the seat in the car and someone breaks into your car and gets it, right, and uses it in the commission of a crime, you are also charged in that. So what they do is they make this very small safe, and it's about the size of a large paperback, probably 6x9, and it comes with a steel cable and a padlock. And I would take one of those in my luggage, and I would get my clients' documents, passports, anything they didn't want touched. I lock it into that and put that steel cable around plumbing inside the hotel. Now the maid can come in. She can give a key to a boyfriend, whatever. They can see that thing. There's nothing they can do. You can take a sledgehammer to those. You can try and hacksaw them open. You're not getting it. Right? Not without a lot of work. Mm-hmm. They don't weigh very much, and they only cost about $25. So they're well worth it if you want to leave documentation in the hotel.
Why don't they sell that as a travel item?
Well, now. Well, how heavy now, is it? Is it enormously heavy?
No, not really. Probably the size of one of the old portable phones when they first came out, those Motorola.
So like 2 or 3 pounds?
Yeah, probably not even. I think mine's about 2.
What about a laptop, though? Like, I mean, I travel with a laptop for work. Where would I put that?
Well, I'd do the same thing. They have laptop alarms. They have laptop cables that you can lock to the laptop. And then stick that around something in the room that's solid. Or I take mine with me. I just have it with me permanently.
Okay.
Another trick, if you're trying to hide cash, if you don't want to take all your cash with you, there's pretty much only 2 locations, and again, I hate saying this because some thief is going to hear it.
Well, don't worry, we only have like 3 listeners, so.
We only have honest, outstanding citizens.
Only 2 locations in a hotel room that are actually safe. I mean, people think I'll put it in the pillowcase, I'll stick it under the mattress, I'll put it in my luggage, I'm going to hide it under the TV set. There's nowhere that those guys don't know that it's hidden except for 2 places. One, you can stick it inside the tap, inside the bathroom.
Ah.
You roll your cash up and you put it up inside the tap. You take a piece of toilet paper, shove it up there to hold it in place. And you make sure you leave the don't disturb sign on, because the last thing you want is the maid coming and running the bathroom.
Right.
The other one, and this takes a little bit longer, and I'll do that if I'm in town for a week or so, I will unscrew the shower curtain and hide it inside the shower curtain.
That's so smart.
I have a little Swiss Army knife, and you screw that back up, and you can keep it in there and then undo that as you need it. So that's a couple of places that are safe. And again, laptops I would take with me. The passport I'm quite comfortable leaving in that little safe, and you chain that around the pipes underneath the sink in the bathroom, or also around one of the window frames. Depends on the hotel room. It's all context driven.
So in the news lately, there's been some problems with tainted foodstuffs and foods and drinks.
Yes.
How can we protect ourselves from those kind of things?
All right. So there's 2. The big one, and it's all over America. It's rife. In my book, I actually mentioned my ex-wife was out one night with her girlfriend, and they had their drink spiked. There's a couple of tricks for the drink one, and that, of course, is roofies. Mm-hmm. Rohypnol, I think, is the medical name for that stuff, and that's the date. And this stuff is a nightmare. It's very hard to deal with because as a bouncer in a nightclub, I would see some guy carting a woman out who he claims is his girlfriend who's had too much to drink, and you don't know. Mm-hmm. It probably is his girlfriend who had too much to drink, but she could also have been knocked out with this stuff being taken away, and we've got no way of knowing. Couple of tricks for that. One, never, ever, ever accept a drink from a stranger.
Yep.
Right? And yet girls do it all the time. She did it that night. They were sitting at the bar celebrating a birthday. The guy came over. We heard it was your birthday. We'd like to buy you a drink. Right? You want to watch and make sure that you see the barman making the drink. So someone doesn't bring it to your table. Right? You are at the bar and you watch the guy make it. That's one step. Next step, you never, ever leave your drink, go somewhere, come back and start. You either scull it before you go, so if you're going out on the dance floor or to the bathroom, you either gulp it down and then go, or throw it away and get a fresh one. I just put a clip up on my page on Facebook, and it's going viral, of a guy throwing roofies in girls' drinks while they're posing for selfies.
Oh, wow.
I saw that.
Yeah, the girl's standing there with a drink like this up to the side, looking at the camera, and he comes up and throws the roofie right in, and like 1 second's done. You always want to put your hand over the top of the glass. That's how I hold my glass.
Everyone should just invest in sippy cups at this point. We just need to.
It's better for your wardrobe anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was someone working on something. I heard a rumor that, you know, they had a fingernail polish that you could dip it in the drink and it would change color.
They actually developed that at NC State here down the road, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I think it turned out to be an urban legend. Yeah, with regards to the food in South America, I had people try and tell me it was a myth and an urban legend, but it's actually true. We verified it. They're using scopolamine, which is an old truth serum, and it's a drug that's tasteless and odorless, so they can put it in food, they can stick it in drinks, and women have even brushed it on their cleavage, and they invite the dumb American tourist to stick between... stick his face in their cleavage, and then when he sniffs that, it leaves you anywhere from 1 to 4 days. You'll have partial memory loss. You're completely muscle. They can walk you around and do whatever they want with you, and lots of people wake up. They've lost everything. They'll even walk up to the ATM and punch in their PIN number. They pretty much say you could put a gun in someone's head, point it at someone, and tell them to pull the trigger. So that one is very real and very scary. What you have to watch out for there is, again, people who are overly friendly, and when you try and dissuade them, they keep pushing and pushing and pushing. Being invited, strangers going back to people's houses, the safest thing there is the old safety in number. You know, don't be out on your own if you can possibly avoid it. Be very careful of stuff outside of, you know, high-end restaurants. Watch out for any, you know, sort of roadside stuff, somebody coming up asking you, inviting you over their table to hang out. Yeah, that one's very, very real and very dangerous.
In talking about strength of numbers, and one thing that my dad always taught my sister and myself, he traveled on business a lot. He said one way to keep yourself safe is to actually, when you need to go out to eat or whatever, go eat at the bar and get to know the bartender, yep, and they'll look out for you. Would you stand by that statement?
Absolutely. One of the best things you can do is be as friendly as possible when you're on the road with people. Meet as many of the locals as you can, especially the hotel staff. A lot of people, when they travel, for whatever reason, look down with disdain at the maids and the bellhops, you know, and the cleaners and so on in the hotel. They will be your best friends, and they're the best warning system you have. If they like you, they will give you all sorts of tips and warnings and protect you if you treat them right. So one of the things I always do when I travel is I put the do not disturb sign on my door. I don't want anyone going in and cleaning unless I'm there for 3 weeks. I don't need anyone going into my room. I don't need fresh towels every day. And what I'll do is I will tip the maid a ton of money. And I just say, I'm good. I'll let you know if I need something, and I'll hand her $20 and then go about my stuff. And she will then keep an eye on my stuff in my room. I'm aware of a maid of mine was overseas in Europe. There was a gang that would target Americans in the hotel and mug them when they came outside. One night they're in a restaurant eating. They were getting up to leave, and he said, you guys should stay and hang out for a while and have some coffee. And they sort of detected that there was something going on, so they did. And later on he told them, yeah, there was a gang outside waiting for Americans to come out, but you guys have been looking after me, so I thought I'd... Now, they figured he would probably normally tip the gang off when the Americans were coming out, but because they had treated him well, he looked at them now with, you know, he didn't treat them as victims, mm-hmm, he treated them as friends. So it never, ever, ever hurts to be treat people well when you're traveling. And so many people don't. Mm-hmm. I'm always, when I travel and I watch people argue or look down upon or treat the air crew when they're getting on the plane, they're snapping at the hostess. I mean, that is the worst thing you can do. You want those people on your side, not against you.
That person may very well have your life in their hands. I mean, I have never understood that either. It's like, this is like your connection to life once you're up in the air in this metal tube.
I'm the one bringing those people M&Ms and stuff. So.
Yeah, and I got on a flight. I was going out to L.A. for Deadliest Warrior, and as I got on the plane, I said to the woman, you know, and she just got done arguing with some clown who was moaning about something. And I said, I don't know if there's any air marshals on the plane, but if there's not and you have any trouble, you call me, right, and I'll take care of it for you. And she laughed, and I went and sat in my seat. So we're about 2 minutes into getting ready to take off, and she comes down and signals me. And I said, what's up? She said, I'm thinking I'm going to have to throw someone off the plane, right? She said, get your stuff. You're being upgraded.
Nice. And,
I was first class the whole way, and I got first class on the way back. She left a note inside the computer, and I got it on the way back as well. So, yeah, it never hurts to be nice to people.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay, so I have a question. My parents are getting ready to go to Europe, and my dad hasn't been to Europe since the 80s. My mom has never been. And my mom is like the notorious gets scammed everywhere she goes. So what is the best thing I can tell her? I've already told her, don't take your purse with all the crap in it. You know, like, get only take what you need. But what should I really tell her?
You should buy them. I'm not kidding when I say this, and it's not a shameless plug. Get on my book.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Seriously. There's so many of these things that are in there. You know, there's scams with taxis. There's about 15 common scams with cabs. The book tells you how to deal, where you should sit in the taxi, you know, matching the guy's photo to his ID, engaging him in conversation, what you can say and what you can't, bartering for the fare before you go somewhere, talking to him as if you've done this trip many times so he doesn't think he can take you for the grand tour. When an old one used to be, you leave the bags at the airport, you put them next to the cab, the driver says he'll take care of them. And instead of putting all four in the trunk, he puts three in the trunk and off you go, and his mate picks up the fourth one. So there's a whole list of those. Then there's a whole list of going into the hotel. There's a whole list of what I do when I'm out on foot, ATM security, taxi cabs, on foot. Traveling with kids. I mean, there's all of this stuff that you're going to need. There's just so many of them, and they change all the time. You know, there's the pickpocket scams.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ones I talk about, there's two or three interesting ones here. One, in India, there is, in the upscale hotel area where all the big American hotels are, there's a great big banner tied across the street that says, beware of pickpockets. And it's written in every single language under the sun. What's interesting about it is the pickpockets paid to put the sign up. So they had banner made, right? And they had it done in all these different languages, and they string it across the alleyway between two buildings. Because the first thing you do when you see that sign is like, honey, check that they haven't got your stuff. And so the wife opens her purse and looks inside. The husband pats his back pocket where his wallet is. And you've just told the pickpocket teams, right, where your stuff is. So now they don't have to bump into you and, like, pat down seven different pockets. They know exactly where to bump into you and what to lift. Another one they do here, they do it in England, happens every Christmas. The gangs from Brazil come up. They will yell on the train. They'll be on a train carriage, and they yell out, hey, everybody, check your stuff, because I've just noticed I've had my wallet is gone, and I had it when I got on the train. It's a pickpocket on the carriage. Well, he's a pickpocket, and so are his seven friends sitting in amongst the passengers. And, of course, everybody pats their jacket, their pocket, their wallet, their briefcase. They open up their stuff and look, and the team is clocking where everyone's stuff is. Now they lift it as you get off and go. And you think you're going to stop them, and you're not. They go to a school called the School of Seven Bells, and the graduation exercises, the instructor has a bell in each pocket, and you have to get something out of each pocket without setting the bell off. An interesting little side, Cameron Diaz went through that school for her role in Gangs of New York. She played the part of what's called a dip, which is a pickpocket. And one of my bodyguard mates was telling me she was pickpocketing everybody on the movie set.
Method acting.
They'd go to lunch and she'd hand the, you know, she'd say, I'm paying, and she'd have the producer's wallet in his, or the director's wallet.
Oh, my God.
Kind of like a modern-day Oliver.
Yeah.
She did about a month worth of training with them and got really, really good at it.
Wow.
That's the stuff. I mean, the old ketchup scan. Someone comes up with a little sachet of ketchup. They squirt it on your coat from behind, and their friends come running over and go, oh, ma'am, I'm sorry, look, you've got ketchup on your back, and they help you get the jacket off, and they help you clean it. And, of course, while you're doing that, they're walking away with your bag because your attention is focused on the jacket and the jacket being clean. Now, there's 950 of those things. And I can't put them all in the book. There's just too many.
There's too many, man. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, you think about things like that pickpocket trick.
Awareness,
and
again, being aware of
as logical as it is to hear them say, okay, well, you're checking your wallet. So now I'm thinking, okay, so if I ever hear that on a train, I'm not going to do that. But you know that's the first thing. Yeah, it's a reflex. You're just going to do it.
Hands down, knowledge is your best weapon. So it's when you're aware of the scams and the cons, then you start to learn what to look out for. You know, and other things, like, you know, I take clients and they want to get the penthouse, and I'm like, no, we're going on the second or the third floor, and they want the penthouse. There's not a fire truck in the world can get a ladder above the eighth floor. I think in America it's 10 in the big cities, but in most places in the world, you're not getting a fire truck getting a ladder up higher than eighth floor. And they have hotel fires all the time. Trump Tower just had one, like, 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And someone died in it. How high was that thing off the ground? There's not a fire truck getting up there.
I just made a mental note to never, ever stay above the eighth floor.
And the third and the first, the ground floor is dangerous because that's the one that's always broken into and robbed and hit, and it's very easy to get in and out because of all the foot traffic in a hotel. Once you start going up at second floor and third floor, then you reduce that amount of foot traffic going in and out. They have no legitimate reason to be up there, so, you know, security one were in ground spot. So I always took my client second or third, and then if there is a fire, both of those are heights that you can jump.
I have never felt safe. Like, it's strange. In a big city, the ground floor has never bothered me, but yeah. In rural places with, like, little motels or things like that, yes. That are out of the way, in the, you know, where you look out your window and you see, like, dark parking lot, yes. Land, and if I'm on the ground floor, I never feel safe. Like, I can never get a restful sleep.
Well, here's one good trick for that, and it's in the book, and I thought maybe Donna had heard this one before. One of the cheapest security things you can get, there's two in my kit that I take all the time, is a rubber door wedge, right, which costs about $3 for a packet of five of them at Lowe's, and you kick that under the door. So now it doesn't matter if they have the key to the room, right, they can't get in because you boot the rubber door wedge underneath. And then I take a roll of bubble wrap, and I put that on the inside of the door. It's about the size of a doormat. It rolls up and goes inside my luggage. It takes up no space at all. And I put that inside the door. So now if they were to get past the door wedge or they had a pass key and they start walking across that at night, it makes the loud popping noise and wakes you up.
Huh.
So that costs less than $3 to make that whole security kit.
Well, I do remember one of the tips you gave all of us, that when you're in a foreign country, just pick up a local newspaper so you look like you belong.
Yep. Local news. Yeah, just don't read it upside down. One of my clients. he was reading it upside down. I'm like, no, other way up, Skip.
It's hard to tell sometimes.
So you go the quickest. It looks like an expat.
Well, and here, this comes back to bodyguarding 101. There's two ways to keep a client safe. I can lower his profile so no one realizes who or what we are. So think of a celebrity putting on the baseball cap and the sunglasses, mm-hmm. and traveling incognito, or I can harden the target. So I go on with a whole team of security and armored vehicles, and we stay in a gated compound, blah, blah, blah. And people are no different. You can harden your target so you can be very switched on, have your head on a swivel, always be looking around you, keep your money in a money belt, look like you know what you're doing, don't get drunk, don't do, you know, most self-defense, stupid people hanging out with stupid friends in stupid places doing stupid things. If you look sharp, they'll pass on and look for an easier target. So, and then lowering your profile is the one we talked about. Carry the local newspaper, dress like a local, stay in the local hotels, and then you don't look like the obvious tourist, so you're not going to get targeted.
Don't wear anything with an American flag on it.
Yeah. Well, the big giveaway for Americans that they've told me from overseas is that we love to wear backpacks. Mm-hmm. Nobody else does. So they spot the American tourists immediately because they're all wearing backpacks.
Backpacks and sneakers. Not says in Europe they wear you nice, like, dressier type of shoes.
Shoes, yeah. And no backpack. And we stick that on and immediately it's, like, so obvious. It's like, rob me. And they love foreigners. They love foreigners because they take your $800 camera, and assuming they catch the guy, which they almost never do, let's say they catch him and call you and go, you've got to come back for court. Well, you have to pay for your ticket back. So it's going to cost you $2,000 in airfare, right, to go back and fight over an $800 camera. And those people go, forget it. And the bad guys know that, which is why tourists are such a desirable target.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
So the two that were big when I was in Europe this past summer were the I saw people going around with the petitions in France.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The come sign, and then I had been warned about that, so she came, made a beeline for me, and I made a beeline directly the opposite direction.
Yeah, well, that's another one. That's a very, very common pickpocket scam, and they're distracting you. You should recommend your viewers watch a TED talk by a guy called Apollo, and he is a professional pickpocketer.
Hmm.
And he brings people up on the stage and he's talking to them. And while he's talking to them, he's lifting stuff out of their pockets and they're completely oblivious. And he explains how the brain works, how that's possible. Your brain cannot focus on two things at once. It absolutely cannot do it. So when he's grabbing your right wrist and talking to you saying, what's this? right? You have absolutely no way of feeling or knowing that he's taking your wallet out of your back pocket. And so he puts that in his own pocket. Then he leans over and pats this and he says, "Where's your wallet?" While you're doing that, he's taking your watch off your hand. And he tells you he's going to do it, and he still doesn't. That's one of the best TED Talks you'll ever see if you want to understand the mindset of how it makes it so easy for these guys to get you.
I think you just have to be a little bit of a skeptical person when you travel. My husband's always alert and always on. He's yes. former military. And so we were in Rome, and we're at the Trevi Fountain. And here's me like, "Oh, this is so great." And these guys start fighting. They're the people with the fires for different restaurants. And it was a staged fight. And I didn't know that. I thought it was a real fight. And as soon as it happened, my husband was like, "Nope." And he grabbed me and we left the vicinity immediately in the opposite direction. And then as we're walking away, he's like, that was distraction.
Yes.
And I was reading about it later online that they have like teams of pickpockets that will go through the crowds.
Yes.
So immediately so you hear something like that or it's a distraction, you have to get away from all the people because
And there's millions of those. They'll get into fights, they'll get into argument, they'll have staged car crashes, they'll do all sorts of stuff, and that's exactly what they're doing. It's a distraction. You're all looking at that, and while you're focused on that, the crime is happening over here, and you don't see it.
And see, that kind of goes against that whole, like, safety in numbers, stay together, it's dark at night, why do we want to go down this alley? And I'm looking at my husband, and he's like, "Because this is safer." At this point, this is safer than being over there.
Are we running out of time?
We are.
We are.
So,
you asked about kids real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We didn't cover the children.
Real quick. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Real fast, couple of quick things. One, in the plane, stick them on the window or in between you. That way, if you fall asleep and they're going to run around, they've got to climb over you and they'll wake you up. So don't put them in the aisle. All right? They'll also tend to stick their hands and feet out, and when the cart's coming up, it can catch them and cause injury. So they should be on the inside. Depending on their age, you can give them a cell phone that has a tracking device. If they're old enough, you give them an emergency rendezvous point. So if you get separated, they know where to go to find you. If they're a little bit younger than that, you put the hotel where you're staying and the address in the native language and stick that in their pockets. Tell them if they get lost to go find a mum with kids. Don't go up to a policeman or a man or a group of people. Go find another mum with kids and ask her and tell her you're lost and hand over that card. So that's a couple of little... and then bright-colored ponchos are good because you can spot them in the distance. You can also give them a whistle if they get lost that they can blow. So there's a couple of little quick things I used to do when we traveled.
Wonderful.
Out of time, so.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, no, thank you. Sorry, we have to meet a download size or else Heidi gets upset.
I'm totally sending that book to my parents.
Yeah, I'm going to buy it for my sister, actually.
Yeah.
Well, that is our show for this week, and we want to thank Nick Hughes very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
Awesome. So we welcome your comments and feedback on this episode, or any episode, really. So to leave comments, please visit us at outlandertravel.com and then click on podcast at the top of the page and find the episode that you wish to comment on. Or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpodcast. Or just search for Fly Away and be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. So on behalf of Lindsay, Sandy, Laura, Elizabeth, and myself, Donna, we want to thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week. Gotta fly.